Welcome to the Unblocking Crypto Podcast. This podcast is not financial advice. It's meant for entertainment purposes only. These are just the opinions of a couple of rambling wrecks.
Welcome back to episode number 163 of Unblocking Crypto. Al, great to see you. So I think this week was maybe a little bit of a slower week, although there were some things that kind of came out from the crypto summit. So we'll talk a little bit about that. Maybe to start, let's talk about Cynthia Lummis's Bitcoin Act. She's reintroduced that and now has 13 sponsors. When she did it a year ago, it had one, her. So there's five Republicans in the Senate. And then there's also a version of this in the House that has seven different sponsors. Her bill is for the U.S. to buy 1 million Bitcoin over 5 years. The House bill is really trying to take Trump's executive order and codify that into law. So both would be great. I'm kind of intrigued to see what happens with all of this because, I mean, we need something to happen before, I would say, the next 2 years happens and theoretically the majority isn't with the Republicans in the House and the Senate anymore.
Yeah, I mean, the executive order is good all the way up until the next president says it's not. So it, we kind of need to get a little bit of legislation involved. Having multiple co-sponsors on the legislation is a good sign because she has been like a one woman show, and that usually doesn't pass. But she seems super resilient, and she doesn't seem to give up. I mean, she's been doing this for years, so I like the chances. I feel like the tide is going our way, and more politicians are at least loosening up if they're against Bitcoin and crypto, and the ones that are neutral seem to be favoring it. So in a few more months, I think that you'll see a lot of favorable things coming out of Washington. And yeah, if one of these things passes, it'd be great. I kind of like the, hey, let's find innovative ways to acquire Bitcoin without spending taxpayer dollars or printing money. I kind of just like, you know, they always talk about like, well, if you still are sitting in a chair, then you haven't bought enough Bitcoin. Well, you should sell the chair and buy Bitcoin. And so like finding cash flow neutral ways for the U.S. government to buy Bitcoin has the same feel to me. It's like, hey, you have an extra building you're not using, you should sell it and buy Bitcoin. And so I kind of dig that. And but at the same time, printing money to buy Bitcoin at that level is very pro Bitcoin, like a attack on the dollar via the U.S. government printing money to buy Bitcoin. So, you know, but Bitcoin tends to win as long as time keeps going. So you kind of, it doesn't matter which way they choose. It's good either way. But I just personally, I'd like the sell the chairs, buy the Bitcoin stuff.
Yeah, it was interesting. I mean, last week they had that crypto summit and there wasn't a ton of information that came out of it because there was only, 20 to 40 minutes that was actually publicized. And then there was a closed door that happened for a few hours. There was some stuff that I did hear about Bo Hines, who we've talked about before, but he's like this executive director of the Presidential Working Group on Digital Assets. He apparently told the entire closed door roundtable that the White House wants to acquire as much Bitcoin as it can. So, which is, I mean, great. No surprise there. What's interesting that I heard too is that the Treasury met with three crypto firms to decide who would custody the Bitcoin reserve. And Anchorage Digital was one of those. And I think they were the one that was telling everybody. I don't know who the other two are, but at least they're moving forward on what to do with this. So I think it's going to start with the Bitcoin that they've acquired from the legal perspective. But yeah, it's exciting to see that it's moving. I mean, I think it's still going to take some time, but at least it's headed in the right direction.
Yeah. And you know, the Trump administration got off to like a crazy fast start. And like where they could move fast, they moved fast. So I'm curious to see, you know, if this thing kind of stalls out and goes back into government speed, or if they continue to, you know, really operate at kind of a startup business speed. So we'll see what happens. I think no matter what, it's coming, it's going to be favorable to the industry. And we'll see if that, we'll see what they can get done. Any sort of legislation that's pro Bitcoin would be pretty solid. Like that's something that's really tough to do. Not just like because Bitcoin and crypto is what it is and the market, and we've had, you know, the same, the SBF and Silk Road. I mean, there's a lot of things that, but they just don't pass legislation anymore. Like, the only thing they do is they wait until they got to shut the government down, and then they pass $1 trillion, you know, gigantic omnibus bill. So if they actually pass like some specific legislation again for pro Bitcoin, then that would be like, to me, that's a huge sign.
Yeah, it's like the legislation they do pass is a bunch of things put in together and no one can really understand what's happening in it, and it's all split up. Kind of going back to, we need to do something before the Democrats get back in the power. There's apparently a few Democrats that are still attacking crypto. The Stable Act, which is pretty much the clarity or regulation on stablecoins, is getting pushback from a couple of Democrats. And what it seems like is they would prefer a CDBC. They don't want a stable coin that they can't control, which is crazy to me. And I mean, I know you're going to be surprised, but it's the states of California, Massachusetts that are pushing back against this. And they think it's only going to benefit the big tech and crypto bros and not benefit the United States at all, which is just, it's crazy to me how little they understand of what's going on.
Yeah, that's, I'm getting like more and more frustrated about, it seems like there's a 20% of Americans that are happy to vote for stuff that's very much not in the ethos of America, right? Like CBD, tracking people's spending behaviors and then being able to modify what their holdings are worth and based on their behavior is like so far away from what got us here, being like a dominant country in the United States, in the world, that I don't see how you could really support that. Even if you do believe that the government, you know, is a net good and it is the path to, you know, bringing poor people up and, you know, all these, like, all the things that ideally a government could do. If you think all of that's true, I still don't think you want them to be able to say, hey, you have bought too much of this. Your dollars can no longer buy those products for the until the end of the month. And then I don't know how you can support that. So I can't tell if CBDC stuff is like very rarely talked about, but then emphasized in, you know, crypto journalism or whatever, and it's kind of like a boogeyman, or if it's really getting talked about at a high level. I can't get a good read on that. So anyway, we'll see, but I can't imagine that anything like that's going to have a shot over the next 4 years.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think the CBDC is happening anytime soon. I do think that, I guess the hope was that there was a lot of Democrats starting to understand crypto. And I think there's still a bunch that are fighting it tooth and nail for some reason. And they're probably the same ones complaining about all the money that Doge is finding, yet they're not coming out and saying why they shouldn't be stopping payments on some of these things. So it's, that's a whole nother issue, but hopefully if the House passes a bill that actually gets the executive order into some sort of actual bill, then that would be fantastic to move crypto forward in the United States.
Yeah, I mean, there's plenty of ways for them to acquire Bitcoin, and if they can do it in a way that isn't hurting people, right? Printing money hurts people, taxing people hurts people. So if they can do it by like taking some previous bad decisions and turning those into good decisions by selling with the assets from the bad decisions and buying Bitcoin, you know, that seems like a relatively decent move for a government to make.
Yeah. So, I mean, I know we talked about California and Massachusetts having some issues. There's been no surprise there since some of their senators have some problems with crypto in general. Kentucky's been kind of the opposite. They just passed a bill protecting the Bitcoin self-custody. And what's really interesting about it is not a single person voted against it. So it was 91-0 in the House and 37-0 in the Senate. So now the governor has to sign it. I don't know why he wouldn't. If he signs it, it would probably make Kentucky one of the most Bitcoin-friendly states in the United States, which is cool.
Well, if you don't sign that bill that passed with unanimously, then you're in trouble politically. So
you're not going to be back. Yeah. That's for sure. Yeah. Nebraska's trying to follow in their footsteps a little bit and be crypto-friendly. They just passed a Bitcoin ATM bill. They said they have no plans for a Bitcoin strategic reserve, of course, but at least they're trying to protect people that are using the Bitcoin ATMs, which I think are great. I've never used it before. So I'm still kind of confused on what the point of them is a lot of times right now.
I view them as like for people that don't have bank accounts and that aren't plugged in. Like, I'm not sure exactly why there's so many of them or whatever, but their fees are crazy. Like, yeah. Hey, it seems kind of exploitative, but as long as they probably should be regulated, right? I mean, they're sitting in gas stations and there probably needs to be some kind of guardrails around how they should behave and what fees they should have, kind of like, you know, interest rates on different loans and things. You know, they're starting to kind of crack down on predatory lending and things like that. So yeah, that has the same feel to me.
I mean, I guess that would be good. It's theoretically, if you don't want to KYC and get into Bitcoin, maybe that's an option for you. It would just be a very expensive way of doing it. But there's a lot of people in the rest of the world that have no problem paying 50%+ surcharges on Bitcoin to get it and get out of their typical currency. So, I mean, I guess it definitely has a place for some people.
Yeah, if your inflation was crazy, you could pay stuff. But every once in a while, I'll walk by them and kind of see what they have as the price of Bitcoin and compare it to what I have on like TradingView. And there's a big gap. You know, they're paying a lot of float on in order to buy Bitcoin at those machines.
Yeah. So we talked a little while ago about the SEC kind of dropping their suits against Coinbase. Vermont just dropped their crypto staking suit against Coinbase. So, I mean, I think that's a good step forward. Still, I think a few other states that still have some pending suits. So I guess the exciting part is they're realizing that staking crypto is not a security. So hopefully that continues. And I mean, I think the hope is kind of going back to just getting some more clarity on all this. I know we've gotten more clarity in the past, 2 months or less than 2 months than we have in the past 15 years. So we're heading in the right direction. It's just still going to take some time.
Yeah. I mean, they need to figure it out. I mean, it's something new. They don't need to try to shoehorn it into some existing stuff that doesn't apply. So at least the new guys in town actually view it as something that needs to be figured out instead of something that needs to be squashed. So we'll see how it goes. I mean, I still don't know. Like the staking stuff, it's all great as long as things continue to mostly move up. I'm kind of curious to see what happens with that. I don't know. I'm not a big proof of stake guy.
So I feel like we always got to talk about strategy, and I have to like force myself to say strategy instead of MicroStrategy right now. They just bought another $10.7 million of Bitcoin, which I think could be their smallest buy ever, but 130 Bitcoin. So they are still just a little shy of 500,000 Bitcoin. I think it's 499,226. So that's, I mean, it's great to see that. They did announce, though, that they're planning to raise another $500 million to buy more Bitcoin using perpetual stock called Strife. So it'll be $100 a share and pay a fixed rate of 10%, but it'll be for institutional investors only. So they had just come out with their other one that was paying 8%. Now this one is just a flat rate of 10% and it's not convertible like, I guess, the other one. And just finding more ways to get money to buy Bitcoin is what Strategy continues to do. And it's exciting to watch.
It's definitely exciting, but I'm getting kind of tired of like learning new things that I didn't know existed because Michael Saylor comes out with a new way to open up pools of funds to buy Bitcoin. So I'm not sure. I saw that the Strife was a thing, and I saw that like a headline or, you know, kind of a tweet or whatever. And I'm like, okay, I need to freaking dig in and figure this out. And then the last few days have been crazy, so I haven't had a chance to. But it's like, every time I turn around, they're doing something that nobody else is doing to get more money to buy more Bitcoin. And so that's good for them, but it's starting to get like wild.
Yeah. Well, on top of that, they're partnering with Rex Shares and they launched BMAX, which is really a Bitcoin ETF based on Saylor's Bitcoin bond strategy. So I think it's like a Bitcoin corporate treasury convertible bond ETF is the official thing for it, but it will include Strategy. It will include Riot, will include Marathon, all these companies that are pretty much following the strategy playbook in issuing corporate bonds that can be transferred to stock in the future. And yeah, I'm kind of interested to see where this goes. This is giving, yes, common retail the ability to kind of do what all the institutions are being able to do with this. So I don't know. It's kind of going back to what we just said. He just continues to come up with new ideas of how to access more liquidity. And this is just one of those. So it's kind of crazy.
It's crazy. Crazy is a good word. Like every time, you know, I'm glad he's in the room in the crypto summit, but I'm like, man, if he goes on one of his rants, these people may have no idea what he's talking about, and it might sound totally crazy. So I don't know, man. He's been right more than he's been wrong. And, you know, he has to be aware of the fact that creating all these different things becomes very cumbersome to when you start to look at strategy and as a company and what it's doing. Well, then I got to figure out Strike and Strife. I got to understand Bitcoin. You know, complicated doesn't mean better. And so I'm sure he has that in mind as he's doing all these things, but it's starting to become overwhelming, and I'm starting to have like vapor lock.
Well, the stock is starting to go back up again, which is good. So yeah, we'll see what happens, but he definitely keeps things interesting. That's for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so my covered call strategy with MSTR is still working, but it's not as easy when the price goes down, the premiums go down, like tougher to generate the cash flow. But the MSTY ETF has been making some pretty good moves so that the dividend is still pretty solid, despite the fact that the price is going down. You know, we're still in like the high 200s. It was at like 500 at the peak. And so really, honestly, the whole story for them is like the Bitcoin price needs to go up and then everything falls into place. It's like, yeah, pretty simple stock trading. Like if you think Bitcoin's going to go up, then MicroStrategy or Strategy and all of their proxy different ticker symbols are all going to do well too.
Fingers crossed. So we talked about South Korea, I think last week, where they were talking about the possibility of a Bitcoin strategic reserve. Their central bank just dismissed Bitcoin as a strategic reserve, stating that it doesn't meet the reserve criteria of the IMF, which is funny because the IMF probably is trying to fight against Bitcoin. They don't want to lose their power. So, of course, it's not going to meet their criteria. But that's South Korea's perspective for now. And I think El Salvador already had to deal with that, saying they'd give up making Bitcoin a currency, yet they still continue to buy it, even though IMF told them to stop.
Yeah. The El Salvador thing's kind of, it's worth watching because it's like they sign a paper that's like, yeah, okay, fine, whatever. And then they kind of do what they want, which, you know, that seems normal for this sort of situation. It's just time, right? I mean, every time we come here, we sit down and talk. Most of the stuff we talk about is pro Bitcoin and things going our way. And 10%, 20% of it is, well, this country's kind of putting things on hold, or China's going to ban this, or Russia's going to, you know, pause that. But it's like a slow march. And then every once in a while, there's one of the footsteps slips down the hill a little bit. You know, it's like, it's really obvious where this thing's going. And, you know, especially now that the federal government is supportive, that changes in a big way. Like, that's a huge tailwind. It makes it a lot easier for adoption. It makes it a lot easier for people who are always constantly like, well, the federal government's not going to allow Bitcoin. They're going to protect the dollar. I'm like, well, it's tough to make that argument right now because they're so favorable to Bitcoin. So, you know, from a high level, like macro standpoint, I mean, it seems like they're weakening the dollar. Tariffs are weakening the dollar. Then they want to be more competitive globally and want to kind of balance exports and imports and things like that. So that's a pro Bitcoin move. And then, you know, unemployment's going up. The Doge is getting rid of a lot of jobs that didn't need to exist in the first place. You know, even if you're just on the Phillips curve and super simple, when unemployment goes up, interest rates go down. Like, that's like the easiest job ever. And so they're trying to lower interest rates, they're trying to get the 10-year down, they're trying to improve, home buying abilities and loosen up the housing market. So like lower interest rates is pro Bitcoin. So, I think that they're going to kind of drive this thing and kind of push into until they start being until the people start using the word recession and saying that this is the Trump recession and things like that until they get there. And then I think they flip the switch, man. And I think it's go time. I think liquidity pours in, and I think all your assets go up. And the riskier the asset, the more it goes up. And Bitcoin's still viewed as a risk on asset. So it's almost like this is just the plan, and we're just in it. And that's maybe why the news isn't like there's not a lot of big news right now, because we're just kind of in a slow decline economically on purpose. And there's just not a lot to talk about. We're just in the middle of it. And we need it, right? Nothing goes up in a straight line. And the US economy kind of was because they kept printing money and they kept refinancing long-term debt with short-term debt. And they pulled every lever that they could pull to make the economy look good, making up crap for the employment numbers and hiring a bunch of nonsense federal government employees to bolster the unemployment rate. And I mean, all of that stuff is they got to flush some of that stuff out, and we're going to be in that for at least another couple months. Like summer's usually not that great for Bitcoin, but this one might be one where it's like, all right, time's up, time to crank up the machine and get the economy looking better. And that would be ironically, that would be right in line with the Bitcoin cycle and pumping things up for a big fall ramp up. So maybe I'm seeing what I want to see, but that's just kind of the way I see it.
Well, I think I saw the M2 supply is starting to tick back up and
On
gain
that.
more liquidity. And usually Bitcoin is about a 10 weeks behind it. So I think you're probably spot on. We'll start to see some things in 2.5 months-ish, something like that, which puts us right into the summer. And then that's when it starts. And it takes a handful of months to kind of go into the banana zone. So yeah, I mean, I agree. I hope that's the case. I think we're both optimistic about it. I think it'll be great, but time will tell.
Yeah, I mean it's tough to think you're right about this kind of thing. Like, I mean, is it really so simple as like here we go again? So anyway, it's fun. I feel like the bouncing around we're doing in the 80s is kind of helping build this floor. The previous floor was kind of in that 40s. Then we traded in the 50 to 70s, and then we spiked to the hundreds, and now we got to build up another floor. If that floor is between 80 and 100, that's a pretty good floor, for guys like us who've seen this thing in the single digit thousands. Like building a floor right at six figures is cool. I mean, there's some Bitcoin people out there that think, it's $1 million tomorrow, but I don't think you and I are there. I think
No.
this thing just marches forward, and it's like a ratchet strap. Every time it gets adopted, it kind of you click another ratchet, and it doesn't let go.
I think, like we've talked about, $1 million tomorrow or very soon means there's a lot more problems going on in the world that we're going to have to worry about. And I don't think that's really good for anybody if that happens. So I hope it's not $1 million tomorrow. I hope it's more of a slow hike up to that, and whether that's 30 or whatever it's going to be. Yeah, that's probably the closer time frame that it needs to be rather than the end of 2025 for sure.
Yeah, and the institution stuff is still evolving. I mean, we're 14 months from the ETF approval, and you got Larry Fink and BlackRock now saying, "Yeah, okay, model portfolio. We're pushing. I think it was 1.5%,
Two
and
percent.
was it 2% into the
Yeah.
model portfolio?" I mean, if you're anti-Bitcoin and you just refuse to get off zero, zero sympathy for you at this point. If BlackRock's telling you 2% of your portfolio should be into Bitcoin and you are still at zero, you're like now you're starting to get b behind the curve.
Well, and it's not just that. I mean, they're having conversations about up to 5% with the sovereign wealth funds, right? I mean, it's like way beyond this 0.5% or 1%. I mean, it just keeps getting bigger. Like, shoot, by this time next year, they're going to be saying 10%, right? So it's crazy how much is changing these days.
Yeah, and you know, the thing for me is guys like me, I mean, whatever my percentage is, I'm not going to like rebalance my portfolio every quarter and sell my Bitcoin so that I can buy more other stuff. I'm just going to let the Bitcoin portion of my portfolio take over the rest of it. So I'm not a seller, you know, yeah. Like, and the sellers dictate the price. So there's gotta be a whole bunch of people like me and just kind of sitting there waiting to really get Bitcoin going where you think it's going to go. And honestly, with gold going up almost to $3,000 an ounce, you know, one of the little thresholds I have mentally is Bitcoin taking over half the market cap of gold. Well, the market cap of gold keeps going way up. Mm-hmm. So my first threshold of half the market cap of gold keeps going up too. So I'm like, well, yeah, I'm like, the price of Bitcoin's at 84,000, but I'm still way far away from considering selling Bitcoin. It's an interesting game. We'll see where this takes us. But the more vehicles that Bitcoin holders have to generate cash flow off of Bitcoin, whether it's what, even if it's, you know what, I'm happy with my Bitcoin stack, I'm going to buy MicroStrategy or MSTY and do a covered call strategy and generate cash so that I can pay my bills. That's bullish for Bitcoin, because if you're generating cash, you don't need to sell your Bitcoin to generate cash. So to me, the more ways they figure out how to, you know, these loan programs, Jack Mallers and Strike are coming out with a Bitcoin loan program. And I think he's going to allow you to just roll your interest into your principal so that you don't even have to make payments. So, you know, stuff like that is going to keep Bitcoiners holding Bitcoin, even if the price goes up past where they thought they would sell it. So, you know, it could get weird, man. If there's not a lot of sellers, the price has to go up.
Yeah, I saw Zappo. I don't know if I feel like we've talked about them a long time ago. Yeah. They're a Gibraltar-based bank. They just announced that they're going to allow customers to access up to $1 million in Bitcoin-backed loans, unless you're in the UK or Australia, you don't have access to it. But yeah, I mean, to your point, getting that liquidity to Bitcoin without having to sell is going to be a really interesting thing that changes the game. And I know, oh my God, who's the company in the US that is trying to do kind of the same thing? I mean, I know Strategy is, but who's the guy, Howard
Lutnick? Who's Lutnick's company? Cantor Fitzgerald.
I think they're trying to do something like that as well. But I think Zappo has kind of beaten them to the punch.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's time to come up with, like, if you got good ideas, you need to come up with them quick, because somebody else is going to come up with them. You know, once the government's supporting it, and you got all these guys at all these appointed positions that are supporting it too, you know, it's kind of open season on coming up with good ideas to be innovative in the market.
Well, it's funny too. You mentioned Russia a little while ago, and we've talked so much about Russia, how they like crypto and they hated it, and they've banned mining till like 2031 or something like that. Well, what's coming out is that Russia now is using Bitcoin and crypto in its oil trade with China and India. We've talked about this in the past just because they have all the Western sanctions, so they're trying to skirt those. The monthly trade volume for that is like in the tens of millions of dollars, which, I mean, that's kind of a big deal, which is kind of interesting to hear. But at the same time, that's just a fraction of their total oil market, which I think is like $192 billion. So we're talking about tens of millions versus $192 billion. There's a huge growth potential for somebody like a Russia to do that. And Russia is just one country. If the rest of the countries do this as well, then it's just a good thing for the use case for Bitcoin. And I know people don't want to say that because they're getting around the Western sanctions, but I don't know if I'm always a fan of us using the dollar as a financial weapon either. So, and the rest of the world is not, hence the whole BRICS conversation for the last couple of years too.
Yeah, I mean, I'm no pro-Russian, but the Biden sanctions that they put on Russia and basically negating their US bond values, forcing them to do something. I mean, they're going to trade oil and they're going to sell natural gas. But you know, there's a theory that you don't want to lock your enemies in. You want to force them out the exit that you want them to go through. And I don't know that we did that here. Like when you completely surround them, they choose their exit route, you know, and if you leave them an easy one, then you choose their exit route. And honestly, that, you know, they, I, my understanding is they've used Bitcoin, they've used gold, they're using, you know, they've used local currencies, but like, of course they have, like, they, you can't sanction somebody and then the country's like, okay, we'll just not sell oil and natural gas anymore. You know, it's really the strategy. It's not a strategy. I don't believe there's a strategy. It is like an idea and then they execute it. So I'm not pro Russian. Russia's going, they're a country. They have, they're producing oil and natural gas. They're going to export it. And then if you ban countries from doing it, then they're going to go to countries that aren't banned. So the fact that, like, I would say that is a big deal for Bitcoin. Tens of millions of dollars traded between countries in Bitcoin is a big deal for Bitcoin. It's not a big deal for those countries. You know, that sounds like a little pilot program to see if it works.
Yeah.
And, you know, we know it works, but countries may not. But I mean, you're talking about a country being like, yep, yeah, let's do $10 million of this contract in Bitcoin and then executing it in 10 minutes for $5. It's like, oh, that worked.
Yeah. I don't have to send a ship with gold over to you. This is a lot easier.
Right. And also, like, when they do the gold, you know, they're not shipping gold. It's just like some gold promise. And then they're like, well, hopefully they have the gold. You know, they have all these like questions around trading in gold. And like, oh, we don't have any of those questions with Bitcoin. It's like, man, this is 10 minutes, $5. And I know I got the stuff. Yeah. Like, it's pretty good.
The other crazy part that I saw, we talked last week, I think, about the Bybit hack. North Korea, because of that, is now the third largest state holder of Bitcoin behind the US and the UK. So they have over 13,500 Bitcoin, which I'm not too happy about, but it is what it is. I know hopefully we'll start to figure out how to fix some of this, but it kind of goes back to what we've been talking about for a while is if they're not your keys, that's not your coins, and that's what happened. And granted, it wasn't truly Bitcoin that got hacked in Bybit. It was other coins that they've transferred over to Bitcoin, and they believe Bitcoin's a safer place for it to be. So no surprise there. The good news is Bitcoin is also a public network where everybody can see where those coins are. And now if they try to trade them, I mean, it's going to be very difficult for them to do that without getting flagged.
Yeah. I mean, if they try to go to a bank account from Bitcoin into a bank account so they can get currency, well, KYC says they're going to figure out who you are. If you have somebody that wants to trade and you trade them Bitcoin, well, now their wallet is connected to your wallet. And when they try to get their into some kind of fiat currency, then they're going to go after them and squeeze them to get you. So going to Bitcoin was a curious move. You know, it'd be different if, you know, there was a lot of people, a lot of different places you could, not even that, man, you're talking about so much money. It's not like you're going to be able to buy a bunch of sandwiches and coffees and stuff to liquidate. Yep. And get to just delete and launder this money. I don't know how you launder money using Bitcoin. So I don't know. Like, this will be worth watching because whoever did it has to know enough about crypto and Bitcoin to realize what they did. And I mean, maybe they don't have a strategy either, but it seems, I don't know how you get out of this.
Yeah. I mean, I saw that first and I was like, oh man, this sucks. But at the same time, now I was almost like, well, if it's in Bitcoin and no one wants to interact with it, it's almost like it just killed all this Bitcoin. So now we have 13,500 Bitcoin that are kind of lost. Join the other, whatever, couple thousand that are out there, a couple million, I guess, that have kind of been burned and will never get the keys back. This one has the keys, but no one's going to do business with them. So I don't know. It's crazy. I don't know why they go to Bitcoin. I feel like they'd have to go to Bitcoin and turn it into something else and then try to use it. But I don't know. This will be interesting to pay attention to for sure.
Yeah. I the thing is, we can pay attention to it because as soon as they move it, everybody knows.
Yeah. Yeah. There's people following it for sure. Like, of all places to put it, Bitcoin's not anonymous.
Yeah.
So, or, I mean, it's pseudo-anonymous. Yeah.
Yeah, it's anonymous all the way up until you want to get it out of Bitcoin and into something else.
Exactly. So the other thing that was interesting from a world perspective, we've talked about France and them calling up the Telegram founder to say, hey, we want to talk. And as soon as he lands in France, they arrest him. Well, that happened a few months ago. They just gave him a temporary exit from France, which AKA for most people is known as bail. So he's able to go back to Dubai. And I don't know how long he gets there, but at least he gets to go home and see his family for a little bit of time. They're still kind of working through all this, which I think will hopefully be a good thing. Means they're more open to it. I think I even saw something about like the next prime minister of France or something was really big into Bitcoin or really interested in buying Bitcoin, which France is another country that's gone back and forth on what their stance is on crypto. So they used to be one of the leaders and then they went kind of the exact opposite. And it'd be great if they kind of came back and saw the light.
Yeah, Europe seems to go back and forth in general. You know, the ECB is anti-everything, but they passed the MiCA legislation. So, you know, like I said, it's just time. It's like a sloppy walk up where it, more and more people are gain adoption. And then, you know, there's like flush outs and things like that. So we'll see. You know, I feel like governments are making bad, obviously bad decisions. And like in very short, like, governments make a lot of complex, large-scale decisions that have a lot of unintended consequences, and you do this thing, and then these things happen. It doesn't work out the way you thought, and all that. But, like, hey, just, you know, we're not going to arrest you, and then you arrest somebody. It's like, you know that's not a good move. Like, you know, sanctioning Russia and deleting their the value of their U.S. bonds, like, you know that's not a good move. So it's like, these are simple ones, and they're still screwing those up.
Well, it's one of those now, it's any crypto company that France gets an invite from, yeah, just do it over Teams.
Yeah. I'm not coming there. I'm busy that week. I can call in.
Yeah. So this week, March Madness is starting, which is exciting. The other cool part about that is Robinhood has partnered with Kalshi, which Kalshi was a prediction market that is based in the U.S. competing with Polymarket. So it will be the first part they focus on will be a NCAA basketball tournament prediction market, right? So I'm kind of intrigued to see how this goes and what it turns into, but it's interesting to me that Robinhood is getting to this space, right? I mean, that's, I guess, probably a good sign. A crypto regulation is somewhat easing up when Robinhood is saying, oh yeah, we'll get into prediction markets. I know Polymarket isn't really allowed to do anything in the US, but we are.
We'll see, man. Robinhood seems to shoot from the hip a little bit, so, you know, they we'll see how it goes. I'm all for it, man. Like, this is kind of the spider web thing where it's like moving the Overton window. You're more and more and more people that have nothing to do with crypto are talking about Polymarket and prediction markets, and yeah. So having those connections to crypto, that's a good thing for the industry.
And then we talked about Kronos, I think last week too, where they had a vote on whether or not they were going to bring back 70 billion burn crow. Well, the community voted against it. Last minute, Kronos decided to go against the community vote and they decided to remit 70 billion crow. So I'm not really sure why they would do this. Now all of a sudden you go against the community and who is going to be a fan of this token? No, I mean, it's an interesting move. I know it'll give them some money to do some things with, but at this point, I don't see who's going to want to partner with them moving forward.
Yeah. So these cryptocurrencies, a lot of them are all about, I mean, they're all about the network. You have to have people using them in order for them to be valuable. And if you do a move like that and people are like, oh, I'm not using these guys, then you might have printed more crypto, but your value dropped. So that's a crazy move.
It's almost adding 2.5 times more coins back than what was existing in the supply, which is crazy to me. So, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, but buy Bitcoin.
Yeah, exactly.
come on, guys.
Yeah. I know this isn't all about Bitcoin, but I think it's good just to let people know. Sorry. Canary Capital has just filed for a SUI ETF as well. So SUI's been getting a lot of attention. Now it's getting in a possible ETF. So I'll be intrigued to see if there's really a lot of interest in that one moving forward too.
Yeah, I mean, if we are in this Bitcoin cycle, like there is an altcoin piece to that Bitcoin cycle, so it could be good for those guys.
Yeah, and Hashdex even just asked the SEC to be able to add Solana, XRP, and Cardano to their indexed crypto fund. So I'll be intrigued to see if that happens. I know they had said they wanted the option to do that. Well, they're already doing it, apparently. So that was a very quick turnaround from them. Yeah. And then, I mean, I pay attention to Cardano a little bit. So I saw a really interesting collaboration going on between NASA and Cardano. Mm. So they are actively collaborating with NASA on data provenance, track and trace solutions, and satellite data applications. And what the CEO of the Cardano Foundation kind of came out and said is there's a really unique thing that you can do on Cardano, which you can't do on any other blockchains. And it's, they call it Markle Patricia Tries. And I don't want to say I understand it, but I did look up to see what it was. It's an advanced data structure enabling efficient and verifiable storage of complex data sets on the blockchain. And like one of the things they did is they took the entire Bitcoin protocol and put it on Cardano. So now there's kind of a backup to the Bitcoin protocol. If for some reason something happened to the Bitcoin network, it's now on Cardano. And I guess the interesting piece of that is it's constantly being added to, right? So kind of going back to this complex data set, it's open-ended. So every 10 minutes, Bitcoin adds something to it, and that gets added to the Cardano blockchain too. So I'm kind of intrigued to see where this goes. It sounds interesting, and kind of like my belief is that Cardano is doing something a little bit different, and that other companies and countries might be intrigued by it. And with NASA doing stuff in space, they're finding a reason to look at different blockchains, and Cardano seems to be the one that they're following on.
Yeah, I this is outside of my purview, so I'll let it stand there.
And then the last thing that I saw that isn't really related to Bitcoin, although it got a lot of people that are Bitcoin pros kind of, I don't want to say excited, but glad that this is really coming to light. Elon Musk said in an interview that when Doge was looking at, what was it, the treasury or something like that, they found 14 computers that had a blank check authority on printing money. So it is one of those things that everybody in the Bitcoin community has been talking about forever, is you shouldn't just be allowed to print money out of thin air. But once you kind of learn about what the US dollar, that's kind of what happens. And now he's found 14 computers that his view is they were funding Washington for the most part, right? So how true all that is, who knows, right? But it is good that stuff like this is coming out, because I think it starts to build more favorable views on the Bitcoin side, rather than just this unlimited bucket of dollars that they can reach into.
It's really wild to, you can already just generate money via debt. It's wild to have, like, you know what, let's just set up this system where we can just write checks out of thin air they just come from nowhere. Like, you don't need to do that. You're choosing to do that. And it's a bad decision. And of course, eventually somebody's going to spot it. It's frustrating, man. That I'm at this point, I'm like, let's just let Doge keep doing what they're doing. And like, they're going to tick off a lot of people. And yeah, I mean, a lot of people are going to get fired, and maybe that job is necessary, maybe it's not, or whatever. But it's like, man, they're just doing too many things wrong to just be like, we should shut Doge down because of X, Y, or Z. It's like, there's too much stuff going wrong. We got to go figure it out if we have any shot of America having a long runway. I think we got to do it. Like, that's not a Bitcoin conversation. That's a America conversation, but it's just dumb. It's like the federal government stuff. It's like everything that people said they were doing that was a conspiracy theory problem is like, no, that's what they do. That's actually right. It's not a conspiracy theory. This is crazy, man. It's a whole nother podcast. But you know, I mean, that's why Bitcoin's necessary, is like to protect people against this. I mean, you work your whole life to save money, then you retire in 2020, and then you get cut in half, and you don't have time to go back and make any more money because you're retired and your productive years are over. So yeah, we need to do something about it. So this is go for it.
And right now you pretty much get penalized if you save. right? So if you save, you're just losing money left and right. So it's hurting people for sure.
Yeah, I was the executive of my grandmother's estate in 2020, and I sold some property, and I divvied all the money out to everyone. And then this year, that property came back up for sale for a little over twice of what it sold for back then. And the family members are like, "Oh man, da, 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 da." I'm like, "Yeah, but the funds that were distributed are now worth, if you put them in anything, should be worth at least double what they were worth then. Like, you didn't lose anything." But then the response that I got made me think that they're just sitting on cash from 2020. And I'm like, "Oh no, why did you do that? That's a crazy move." So yeah, they are savers and they got cut in half. And I'm like, I'm not a financial advisor. I just needed to execute on what needed to be done, you know, to on this estate. So yeah, if you save, you're screwed.
Yeah. Crazy. Well, I think the solution, just buy Bitcoin.
Saving Bitcoin. Yeah. You can consider it investing or saving, either way.
Yeah. Either way it works.
Yeah.
Better than anything else right now. So
yeah, it could just be saving, because all you have to do is buy Bitcoin and you don't have to pay attention to anything. You don't have to, yep. There's no CEOs, there's no earnings calls. It really is just holding on. It's the same, similar to gold. Like, you just put it in the vault, hold on to your keys. Like,
check back in 10 years, maybe longer.
Exactly.
See what's happened. Awesome. Well, Hal, as always, great chatting. Looking forward to next week.
Thanks, Jason. See you.
If all of these crypto conversations leave you with more questions and you're looking for answers, I've created a product that dives into most of those answers, including why crypto, how to set up a cold wallet, and some of the more advanced strategies for dealing with crypto. Check the link in the notes below, and hope to see you there.